Hi, my name is Kunal, and welcome to the Geeks of the Valley podcast, which connects with some of the brightest minds globally who are leading their respective industries today to discuss the hottest upcoming industry trends and how their work is affecting the global economy. What started off as a coffee chat has now grown into a global platform for visionaries.
Today, we have a very special guest joining us. Josh, the founder and managing partner of Convoy Ventures. With a keen eye for groundbreaking platforms and technologies, Convoy Ventures is at the forefront of investment in the gaming industry. But Josh's journey doesn't stop there. Before immersing himself in the gaming world, he honed his skills as a sales and trader with Morgan Stanley, covering regions like Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and Latin America, working closely with hedge funds and asset managers. With his wealth of experience and expertise, we are thrilled to have Josh on the show. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the exciting realm of gaming and technology with our incredible guest. Josh, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on the show.
And how are things with you over there in Denver, Colorado?
Things are great. Things are great. We're heading into the winter, and it's a beautiful state to live in.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. Let's jump into the first question here, shall we?
Sounds great.
So Josh, as the managing partner and head of Convoy Ventures, can you tell us more about Convoy and what makes you different?
Absolutely. Convoy Ventures is an early stage investment firm based out of Denver, Colorado. We invest into pre-seed, seed, and Series A companies in the gaming industry. Our check size is about 1 to 5 million. We put this into early stage companies across North America, Europe, Africa, Southeast Asia, and elsewhere. We've been at this for about 6 or 7 years now, currently on Fund 3, investing out of $150 million Fund 3. And I'm one of the three co-founders of the firm. And we basically, in Colorado, we ski, play video games, and I like to golf as well. So it's a fun time here, and I love what I get to do.
So Josh, from your perspective, how do you foresee the evolution of the venture asset class over the next 5 to 10 years?
The venture asset class is maturing to its next level up, sort of my short one-liner on that. But what's happening right now is venture capital has been around for, really since the 80s, but really took off around the turn of the millennia, around 2000 with the rise of the internet. And over the last 20 years, has become a very robust asset class full of thousands of firms, tens of thousands of individuals. And the asset class is definitely getting to its next level up right now in the middle of what we're going through right now in tech, which is, call it a tech recession, call it a pullback, call it a return to normal. Either way, however you want to phrase it, that event is happening right now. What that's turning the venture capital industry into is we're shifting from a period of zero interest rates or near zero interest rates, from a period of risk on to a period of risk off. And it's a lot harder to raise capital from LPs, from venture, from anywhere in the world. It's very tough to raise capital right now in a risk off environment when rates are so high. So what's happening is venture capital is turning from the last 5 to 8 years of placing bets to actually building companies and helping them build their visions and partnering with founders and doing a lot of the hard work. And that shift is kind of shifting the venture asset class back to what it really started as, which is this value add investor that gets to be partnered with these companies, help them build it, sit on the board, make introductions for them, help them think through strategy, and not just take a bunch of 2 to 8% equity stakes across the board and disappear after wiring the capital. This gave the VC industry kind of a bad rap over the last, 5 to 8 years. And so right now we are seeing a rapid maturation in the venture capital space that I'm incredibly excited about, because not only is this a great time to be an investor, it's also a great time to be a founder, because you get to build companies with sort of the VCs left standing who have the grit to get you where you want to go. And that's a really cool financial partner for early stage founders.
And given that you're in the gaming industry, it has experienced really a remarkable transformation, becoming the social square of the day. So could you share your insights on the evolution of gaming and the factors that have contributed to its prominence as a social phenomenon?
Absolutely. So gaming really started in the 1970s with arcades. People have probably heard of Pong and things like Atari. Well, those arcades started in the 70s and then led to the 80s. Then the 90s came. And in the 90s, the personal computer was really proliferated across the mass consumer. Then we had the rise of the internet around the turn of the millennia. And then the mobile phone hit in the early 2000s. The mobile phone put a computer in everyone's hand. And by nature of that, put the gaming industry into billions of people's hands around the world. Right now, you know, in 2023, there's essentially the fourth platform of gaming that's emerging, which is called the user-generated content industry. This is proliferated by companies like Roblox that have created these huge marketplaces that you can build games on, make a living, play games, earn revenue, and so forth. And so what's really happened here is that gaming now has 3.3 billion people in the world that play video games. And those kind of are broken out to about 700 to 800 million people play on console, about a billion to a billion two play on PC, and then about 2.2 to 2.4 billion people play on mobile. As you can see, there's probably crossover there where people play on multiple devices, but gaming has now become the new social square of the world today. People go to not only play games and be entertained by games, but they go into these virtual worlds to hang out with their friends and to sit in lobbies and catch up on life. And that reality has created virtual worlds that are truly immense and vast. And that's why we have an almost $200 billion industry today that is vastly ahead of Hollywood at about $45 billion and dramatically ahead of music, which is about $25 billion. The gaming industry today, with 3.3 billion people, $200 billion in revenue a year, is now attracting the attention of some of the largest tech companies in the world. Just recently, we saw Microsoft conclude a $62 billion acquisition in the gaming industry when they bought the Activision Blizzard. This was the largest acquisition that Microsoft has ever done. And so this is an immense acquisition. And, you know, just quick correction, it actually wasn't 62, it was $68 billion. And so this is far above and beyond their last acquisition that was super big with LinkedIn. So here we go with the gaming industry. Everyone's playing games and the largest tech companies are paying attention, and we're excited for its future because we think it's very, very bright.
And speaking of, you know, living and gaming in virtual worlds, you know, taking a step into kind of the metaverse and Web3 gaming sector, what is your view on the move to earn or play to earn gaming startup ecosystem?
Yeah, this is an industry that we've actually had a fair amount of success and experience investing into. We're investors in Sky Mavis that owns Axie Infinity. And we're also investors in another company, Genopets and Cypher, and then a handful of other Web3 companies that took advantage of the intersection of what is blockchain technology and a gaming industry with some of the numbers that I just mentioned, you know, 3.3 billion people. Being a digitally native industry in gaming, it was a very natural fit for the blockchain community to think that, well, mass adoption, not just siloed adoption to fintech, is probably going to come through a digitally native audience, of which gaming is the by far leader in the entire world. So with that thesis, we made a few investments around this space, and it's been, you know, a definitely exciting space for us to invest in. We're thrilled to partner with these teams. We like investing into this space. I think right now is a time where we're not actively investing at the intersection of Web3 and gaming. We're not seeing a lot of amazing opportunities right now. So whereas we have invested in the past with successful teams, this isn't a space that we're really focused on right now. And that primarily comes down to most of the startups that are pitching out there are pitching things that people don't actually want. They're good ideas on paper. They're good ideas in theory, but they're not good ideas at scale that are solving a consumer demand or a consumer need. So to that point, Web3 gaming has had its moments, but we are not excited of where it is today. And so for where we see new investments today, this is something we've actually pulled back from. But when the thing does change around, it'll probably come from teams that are solving a consumer demand, not necessarily just a consumer hypothesis that they might want. And so I think that's separating the best founders from those chasing a hype trend.
And as you alluded to, it's fascinating to witness the exponential growth of the gaming industry from a relatively small audience to, as you said, 3.3 billion people today. And so I guess in your opinion, what are the key driving forces behind this rapid expansion? And what implications does it really have for the gaming industry?
The gaming industry in the 1970s and 80s took full advantage of the rise of the CPU. And then about 15, 20 years later, it drove on the adoption was driven by the adoption of the internet. And so as the internet came on board, you could play games remotely all over the place. You wouldn't just play them locally, right? You'd have to go to the arcade to play them or buy an arcade for yourself. And so that was a huge driver of adoption. Then with the internet, that was the next leg. And after that, the mobile phone then said, okay, you don't even have to be sitting down at your computer to play these games. You can now play on the go. That was a huge leap forward and added billions of people to the gaming industry. Today, we add about 100 million people to the gaming industry every single year. That's kind of the trend. And what is happening right now that is continuing and proliferating the adoption of gaming is the rise of cloud infrastructure. So cloud infrastructure has allowed for the speed of the internet to create new types of gameplay. So for example, if you're familiar with Battle Royale or mass multiplayer online games like EVE Online, World of Warcraft, Elder Scrolls, these experiences in virtual worlds would not be possible without immense, fast, and improved cloud infrastructure led by things like AWS, Azure, and the gaming industry building on top of these technological innovations. That's what's really pushing things forward and has led to each new leg up for the gaming industry over the last 20, 30, 40 years. And there's no sign that it's going to stop anytime soon. I think the next leg up will come through not necessarily a hardware improvement, but further improvement around cloud infrastructure that everyone talks about with cloud gaming, but it's much more deep than just that coined term. It's really that technological innovation is going to allow for speed and access at a level that will bring on another billion gamers to the gaming industry over the next 10 years, which is exactly what's going to happen.
And when it comes to kind of finding the next big successes like Discord, Unity, Unreal Engine, or Roblox, it can be a challenging task. And how does, I guess, Convoy Ventures approach the investment landscape in search of promising opportunities in the gaming industry? I guess, in other words, what strategies and methodologies do you employ to kind of identify these potential winners?
As a firm, we've spent a lot of time on our internal reporting and internal weekly, monthly, and quarterly content that we release. And some of it we release publicly and some of it we just look at internally. And that helps us identify core trends. We have a weekly newsletter that we've been sending out and archiving for years now. And that has been an incredible source of insights and dialogue with very, very smart people around the industry. We also look at pain points in the industry. At the studio level is where a lot of those pain points emerge. And then the consumer level, what does the consumer need and what do they want? What are they frustrated with? And there's likely a company at that intersection. And then when it comes to, the incumbents. So if you look at companies like Discord or Twitch or Unity, where are they servicing their clients really well? And where could they be doing better? And is there a potential for another entrant to kind of come into that market and further support the expansion of this rapidly growing industry? So the last thing I'd say is, the teams we invest in and partner with are everything. Yes, the vision, yes, the idea, yes, the market, the pricing and everything that goes into that. But from our perspective, the pain points in the industry will be solved by the best teams. They won't be solved by teams that don't have a core vision and a grit going forward. So that's kind of been a huge focus of ours. And I think will continue to be the focus is that the teams are probably the most important. And then the pain points that they're attacking either are ones that we can get venture returns out of or potentially not.
So Josh, given that you are into your third fund at the moment and you've had a lot of time, you know, on the ground pitching and working with LPs and raising these funds. And given that a lot of venture capital fund managers are raising funds right now, when it comes to LP fundraising across regions, can you shed some light on the differences you observed in LP fundraising, particularly in the Middle Eastern regions, and how these regional variations kind of impact the overall investment landscape?
Sure. Happy to comment there. So from our perspective, as a firm, you know, our capital predominantly comes from North America and some from Europe. That's really our focus. And that's kind of where we have found, you know, amazing partners that have partnered with our firm to help us, you know, invest in great companies. And then they've also been amazing thought partners. And it's been an awesome time working with this LP base. When it comes to, you know, the Middle East, this isn't a region that we've explored very much or spent much time in. I know a lot of VCs are over there either right now or have been recently exploring that. You know, we're not closed off to it, but it hasn't been a place that I'm very experienced in. And so I think I'd probably rely on the expertise of others that you guys interview on this great podcast. But the regional differences are interesting to notice across primarily Europe and North America, where we have the most experience, where there's, you know, different types of risk on mentalities based on whether you're a corporate or a family office or a multifamily office or a sovereign wealth fund or institutional or whatever, you know, the approach is. The risk on, risk off mentality, the co-invest or directs or working as an LP, it all varies. And so I think each partner is certainly unique and a little bit different. I think in the United States, there is a ton of interest into early stage venture capital, primarily because I think the tech ecosystem here has found the most success worldwide over the last two decades. And then when it comes to Europe, that is emerging quickly, right? I think that the European tech ecosystem it feels very different than the United States. That said, it is finding some amazing successes and some amazingly great companies. And I think one thing I've noticed in Europe is that there's a lot of family offices that open up their direct tech VC arms of their family office and build out a whole firm there. That's a very interesting model that hasn't been done as much in the United States. It's been done some, but not as much. Usually they partner with some of the VC firms primarily on that and then do directs and stuff. But that's been interesting to notice. And but yeah, that's kind of our experience, and thrilled to partner with an amazing, amazing group of LPs.
So Josh, to wrap up our call with our last question for the day, what piece of advice would you give to our listeners out there?
I'd say if I were to give some advice, it'd probably be specifically tailored around those that are looking to start a VC firm and kind of start with a fund one and kind of build a firm. I think that's where I could probably give the most targeted advice. The three things I'd say is, one, spend some time living and traveling overseas. It gives a global perspective that I think is super important to investing into companies that inevitably are either building with remote teams or selling internationally or across countries. You know, regional sales is not really a thing in tech. You know, I think people in the sense of just selling in the Southeast region of the United States, that's not really a thing. So I'd say spend some time overseas, get to know a few other markets, gives you perspective on the market that becomes your home market. And I think that's important to have. So global perspective, and you have to get on a plane, go live there or stay there for a little while. Second would be to write content. I think content through blogging or newsletters is a very scalable way of building trust and credibility with people around the world. And that's really, really time effective and really an amazing exercise. You know, people say, like, you don't know something unless you can teach it. Well, when you write out a thought or an opinion or a view on a market or a industry, it really forces you to really think it through before you put it into writing and then put it out to the masses to let them, you know, rip it apart or agree with it or healthy debate. The whole gambit exists out there in the world. And then the third thing I would say is to read every legal doc and to read every piece of paper that comes to your desk. And I think that way too many groups don't read the documents they're signing in full detail. And that leads to sometimes a lack of understanding of the key drivers of a deal or the key economics that are driving things, or what happens if XYZ transpires and how does a vote, you know, go through, and what does super pro rata mean? What does anti-dilution clauses actually mean in regards to an Excel cap table? And I think just read every legal doc. I think it's an education in how to run your business as a as an emerging manager and as a VC. And I think it's really important. So travel, live overseas for the global context, write content because it's a scalable way of building trust, and also, you know, a good internal exercise. And then thirdly, read every document that comes across your desk in detail, and you'll be better for it in the long run.
Josh, it was a pleasure having you at Geeks in the Valley, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.